Hey everyone, I'm back again to introduce the Daddy Unscripted podcast. My daddy is the creator and host of the podcast, and he said once he gets some more sponsors, he can start paying me for these intro spots. So if you either want to be a sponsor or want to be my child labor lawyer, contact my dad at daddyunscripted@gmail.com. Anyway, here's my daddy to start this episode. Thanks for listening.
Other than basically, I mean, are you pretty much Packers and Red Sox, or are you also like a closet Hialeah fan?
A closet what fan?
Hialeah.
What is that?
All right, welcome everybody to the Fork in the Road episode with Austin, Ike, and myself. Austin, if you did not hear our primary episode, is a fellow Red Sox fan that I met on Twitter, and he is a stay-at-home dad in the South Dakota area with a really cool story. So if you didn't check out his main episode, make sure you go back and listen to that at some point. But this Fork in the Road episode is mainly about Red Sox baseball. We also talk about, we tie it into some of the parenting issues. We talk about the nostalgia of sports and how the connection can be made with those and a father and his children, as well as some of our kind of own personal experiences growing up with sports, etc. So there is something, you don't have to be a Red Sox fan to enjoy this episode. So I'm assuming a lot of you came over from the land of Twitter as well to listen to this episode. So welcome. I hope you enjoy it. And here is my Fork in the Road episode with Austin.
Right. And I think this was the first year in how long that no Canadian-based teams advanced to the playoffs.
That's right. True, like end times stuff if you're north of the border, which just made me think of a fantastic shirt idea that if anybody does roll with this after hearing it, I just ask for a small percentage, but a shirt that says "Make Canada Great Again" and has all of the logos for the different Canadian hockey teams would be like this is the one time that shirt would actually be humorous and make sense.
That's exquisite. I think you could make some money off that.
Yeah, seriously. They might not love it as much as, I mean, it may not be as hilarious to them as it would be to Americans, but I think that would be a great shirt.
I like it. I hope you can get that off the ground. I don't know what avenue to take, but that would be fantastic.
So we are here again with Austin for his Fork in the Road episode. And if you listened to his main episode, you heard how Austin and I came to know each other, whatnot, through the world of Twitter. And basically, thanks to the world of sports and mainly thanks to the Boston Red Sox. So we will be discussing basically that, the history. I guess we'll kind of go into both of our history, and this will enable some of the people who are my friends who love to ask me and rag on me for being a SoCal native and resident, for being a Red Sox fan, especially with some of my prior history of actually rooting for the local teams, which, I mean, how can you blame? That's what people are supposed to do. But we'll also get into, since you are a South Dakota native, and so who are the teams that your neighbor folk, or, you know, if you go to your supermarket and guys that you're walking around are wearing baseball t-shirts, is it Brewers? Who is everybody rooting for out there?
The most popular local team baseball would be the Minnesota Twins.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense then.
I used to live in Milwaukee, for what it's worth. And I really enjoyed going to going to Brewers games, but yeah, around here, that's the Twins. It's about a 4.5 hour drive to the cities. So if you wanted to catch a game at Target Field, you know, 4.5 hours, you'd be there.
Yeesh.
I never bought into the argument that of supporting the local team. We live, or I live in South Dakota. There is no local team.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of threw regionalism out the window. My parents aren't huge sports fanatics, but dad more or less adopted that. Dad was born in Minnesota, but my grandparents, they quickly moved over to South Dakota within like 3 years after he was born. And I know that grandpa took the whole family to the Metropolitan Stadium. This is when Minnesota had the time before the Metrodome, when they had,
oh wow,
when
they're they had, going way back.
Well, 60, when did dad say? Early, I don't know, early 60s, 63, 65, right around there. And dad got to catch a game at Metropolitan Stadium. It was actually a ticket giveaway. My grandfather had bought a new Ford, and the dealer in South Dakota, and the dealership offered tickets to see the Minnesota Twins, you know, as incentive for your purchase, for your business, which I thought was kind of unique. And especially at the time, you know, the Twins were founded in 61. So
yeah, it's very early on.
Yeah, as a franchise, they were only a few years old. But you know, the short of it is, you know, not a big sports family, my parents, that is, and me not buying into the whole root for the local team theory. I just felt that I was able to choose who I wanted to root for. I remember one of, if not the first game that dad took us to at the Metrodome, and you can guess who the Twins were playing that day, because I left in a hat and a jersey of that team, and that was the Red Sox.
That's awesome.
You know, that was, you know, in that lineup, that was, you know, Wade Boggs, Mike Greenwell, you know, Clemens, those guys. And then the history too. I love history, fascinated by it. And Ted Williams just appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather, my mom's dad, when he returned home from the war, one of the first things he did was attend a baseball game at Old Yankee Stadium. And they were playing the Boston Red Sox.
Mm.
And he got to see Ted Williams play.
Wow.
And I'm just like, kind of hate you, but mm-hmm. I love you, but you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, just, it were just those kinds of things that drew me to the Red Sox. And then of course, once you finally make that pilgrimage to Fenway Park, you know, everything just comes full circle.
Yeah.
And it was great to return this year. It's actually the third year in a row now. Years ago, I told myself it would just be every other, but I lied to myself, and I'm pretty much going at least once a year now, because I kind of need my fix.
And was that a full family trip, or did you just go?
This year it was just me. Last year it was full family, and it was all documented on Twitter. The girls, they love it. They love Wally. They love the city. They love the city. They love Boston. Elena, my 6-year-old, I think she's going to be the biggest sports fan. She'll plop down next to me and watch the game. She knows some of the players by visual recognition, which makes me really proud. And we just enjoy our time. And she has asked, I think, at least twice this week alone, that we go to Boston next year for a family vacation. And I can't fault her for that. It's also my 40th birthday next year, so I think I'm going to get some leeway there, and we'll probably work that in as part of the family trip.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about that.
So did you play sports as a kid, or?
I mean, I played baseball and football and basketball for varying lengths of time. I was very much the proverbial 98-pound weakling, except less than that, of course, when we go back to T-ball years, but not blessed with athleticism. And I was undersized and very, very unsure of myself physically. I didn't like a lot of physical contact, and obviously that doesn't play out very well. So my sports careers never amounted to much. By the time I got to high school, I found out that I was fairly good at convincing an audience to adopt a particular line of thinking. So I got into the debate and had some success there. So in high school, I was on the debate team and in the marching band. So I was your quintessential nerd.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
I wore that with pride. I was very proud of that fact. You know, nothing says geek like a Letterman's jacket with band and debate on it.
Yeah.
I was really asking for it. I don't know why I did it, but I brought it on myself.
That's okay. Look at you now. You can turn around at any of those people who judged you.
This is true. This is true. And yeah, I always wanted to do more with sports, but it just wasn't me. I'm a much better spectator.
There's plenty of dumb athletes out there and not enough true thinkers. And there's a lot of dumb spectators out there as well. I think sometimes I hear some of those kind of things even at baseball games at Angel Stadium, and not saying that all Angel fans are dumb, but...
What I've gathered from Twitter, and they seem to be particularly slanderous toward the Los Angeles Angels, or is it Los Angeles Angels at Anaheim? I forget, they change it.
Yeah, it's... And I think a big part of it truly is history. You know, even though the Angels have been around for a long time, there isn't that history, and a lot of the people that are fans now... You've got three different levels of fans. You've got the lifetime fans. You've got the fans who came in during the or surrounding the time of their 2002 World Series.
Yep, 2002.
And then you've got the Trouters. So the all new people who have come around during the time of Trout and Pujols, and, you know, they... don't exactly have maybe the biggest handle on the game and whatnot as well. But it's funny because almost all of my friends out here are, I don't have many Dodgers fan friends. I would say that almost all of them are Angels fans. And there are a couple who understand what I am talking about and the reasoning behind what I say about how horrible their, you know, it, we as Red Sox fans will yell and scream and curse about some of the moves of our office, but the the ability that they were able to somehow bamboozle the Dodgers into taking that huge trade a few years ago is something that has to be said for them, even though it was a move that shouldn't have had to happen in the first place. But the contracts that the Angels have made and the fact that they are still paying Josh Hamilton, who is not only not playing for them, but not playing for his current team either, as well as all of their outfielder contracts and the contract that they now have with Pujols, which is completely ruined them and what they have done to their farm system and everything. It enables me to give the Red Sox brass a little bit more breathing room when I sit and think about how much worse it really could be.
Oh, no question there. Certainly been blessed with some of the deep pockets that ownership has, and there have been some good signings and some not so good signings. I think one of my favorite stories, since we are talking about the Angels, I don't talk about them often, but you know, you talked about the Trouters, and I don't know if you recall when Mike Trout was drafted, that particular draft pick, if you happen to know its origin.
No.
Do you recall a time when Mark Teixeira played for
the... Oh, yeah. Yes.
Compensation pick. The Yankees gave that up, and the Angels took Trout.
Oh, man.
And I relish in that.
That's a double-sided sword that they got both bad sides of.
Right.
Teixeira has always been one of those that I am very glad that we did, that the Red Sox did not end up with.
For a brief moment, it appeared that that may have been the case.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was an 11th hour like steal. Like, it really looked like it was going to be the Red Sox right then.
Yeah, it really did. And I couldn't be more thankful that that did not follow through. And I got to be honest, talking about first baseman, I was excited when Adrian Gonzalez was brought on board. But of course, the fabled demise of 2011, followed by the Bobby Valentine debacle of 2012, sent him et al. Packing. And now we see Anthony Rizzo flourishing in Chicago.
Oh, Rizzo hurts way worse than Gonzalez. Rizzo, I think a lot of people forget about that because it's one of those things that I think is kind of easily forgettable because you never did really see him in a Red Sox uniform on the field. And that may very well be the case with, gosh, what was that kid's name that we just gave up for Pomeranz?
Anderson Espinoza.
Yeah, yeah. A name that we may be hearing about in the years to come and be wondering what in the hell we did.
I'm very much on record as being a hater of Matt Barnes, but I'm starting to become a believer. It took me a while to warm up to Hanley, you know, while we're on the subject of what players on your own team do you dislike and or hate?
Mm-hmm.
Hanley's maybe come around, and the defense, I mean, he was just so lackadaisical in left field, but I have to remind myself that he was a career infielder.
Right.
Up until that disastrous experiment left field. My God.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Just something you don't want to, something you wake up to in a cold sweat. But, you know, he's very competent at first base, and he's also very confident. And I'm on record as a Clay Buchholz apologist, and I'm fine with that. But this year has made it really tough. And
yeah,
and the proof is in the pudding. He had a great year last year. Part of me feels responsible. I was at Fenway for that start against the Yankees, that series before the All-Star break last year, when his arm gave out and he went on the disabled list. So I feel like a part of a curse or something. I don't know. I still sleep at night and everything, but I do wonder.
But Clay may not be sleeping at night.
No, I don't know. Yeah, I don't. I doubt Clay's is sleeping much at night. I know he was displeased with being demoted, and he views himself as a starter. You know, I've always loved Clay. I still will, even if he goes to another team. But you know, that's the real heart of the matter right now. Is this guy just clogging up a spot?
Yeah.
When you look at your pitching roster, I kind of get that feeling. You never know. You know, we've got dealing Davey Dombrowski now, who has just been making things happen.
Yeah.
Better or worse, depending on whose Twitter feed you read. Can't fault the guy for going out and addressing needs.
Yeah.
I mean, he did it in the offseason. You need a frontline starter? Bring in David Price. Now, I know that has mixed reviews, but at the time, it made sense, and I still believe in Price. Oh,
you know, it's half a season in, like, you know.
Right. I'm not overly concerned about that. You've got you know, we needed that fourth outfielder. Oh, look, welcome, Chris Young.
Yeah.
Happens, he goes on the DL with a hamstring.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, injuries have just been, have just really plagued this team, you know, and it was really telling that you had to start looking at someone like a Blake Swihart as a viable option in left field. I mean, that's insane. I mean, you know, in spring training, I really thought he was going to get a fair amount of time behind the plate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way the catching has panned out has been shocking all around.
I don't like talking about Red Sox catching just because I really feel that Sandy Leon has been snubbed by Major League Baseball. Why he wasn't in the All-Star game is completely beyond me. But that's not what I want to make this about. But, you know,
this I wrote him in on 25 votes.
I did all I could. I know. I did my part. This is, as I would say on Twitter, the hashtag the summer of Sandy. You know, where were you in the summer of Sandy? I mean, this is just absolutely magnificent. I mean, the guy's slugging over 700.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about small sample sizes, but he's in there a ways now. I mean, this isn't 20 at bats.
Yeah. And is he under 400 after that hellacious 1-for-8 that he just went through?
I'm surprised they didn't cut him there. No, I'm kidding.
I know. Seriously, like,
Sandy's at 435 for his batting average.
And he was, 2-for-4 with a triple and a home run tonight?
Exactly. Which helps out when you're slugging north of 700. Keep in mind that this is a career 659 OPS player. So he truly is the Venezuelan Ted Williams. I don't care what anyone else says. I love the hyperbole when it comes to Sandy and Ted Williams. I think it's magnificent. And I mean, the guy keeps on hitting and plays a competent defense too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he looks just fine out there, and you've still got Hannigan and I hope Vasquez can work everything out in Pawtucket. I know he's an exciting player defensively, but his, you know, bat has left something to be desired.
It'll be interesting to see where this all ends up. It just seems really like one of those years, and I'm really hoping I'm not jinxing something by saying it out loud, but some of those weird things about the team and the players and the personnel is just, it's kind of one of those very odd things that are all coming together all at this same time, where it's, you know, it's not the bearded group or anything like that, but the way Poppy is playing and even Pretty Ricky, I mean, the way Ricky is pitching is totally like kind of under the radar. He's what, 12 wins now?
I mean, I don't put a lot of stock in wins, but I mean, he had an incredible run of games with at least 6 innings pitched. I mean, he was your workhorse. He was,
yeah,
Mr. Reliable, which was always nice to see. I actually got to see him pitch at Fenway the other week when I was out there.
Oh, nice. You saw 2 games or 3?
I saw the first two.
Okay.
I had really great seats Friday night right behind home plate with Sean O'Sullivan on the mound. Felt a little cheated, I'm not going to lie. But that was a fantastic experience. I tweeted out a picture of a little kid in a Dustin Pedroia jersey who was just tall enough to see over the actual dugout, and he had both hands there. He was kind of resting his chin on his hands. And, you know, I think my caption was, how can you not love baseball? I mean, it was just a perfect moment. And you would always see Poppy's head poking out of the dugout, and he'd look back and he'd wave at you. And there were some kids there in that immediate area. And, you know, he'd grab a big handful of the double bubble gum and just toss it at the kids. I know he's thrown bats to kids, safely, of course, not not with intent. But I mean, he's just a great ambassador to the game, and it's, you know, it's gonna be really sad to see him go. I mean, I wasn't a child when he started playing for the Red Sox, but kind of feels that way. There's just that certain magical quality to it. I mean, that was 2003. You know, I was 26 at the time, but just like, wow, what a tenure with the Red Sox, and look what he's accomplished. And he's hit more home runs than anyone but Ted Williams in a Red Sox jersey. That's incredible to me. And I don't know how much the players are buying into it, but the whole that win it for Poppy mentality, I think, really has something there. You know, you were talking about, you know, this isn't the Bearded Brothers. It's not that 2013 mystique, but there's a unique chemistry here that you don't capture every year.
Yeah.
And there's so much ridiculous talent, particularly on the offensive side.
Definitely on the offensive side.
It's amazing to watch. I mean, just the other day, I remember tweeting out, you know, the Red Sox were the only team. They had four players who were hitting at or above 300 on the season. Four that were at or above 300, and then three players that had at least 105 hits. Now they have four players with at least 100 hits, and I know Pedroia's batting average has dropped down, but Betts, Bogarts, and Ortiz are all over 300.
And your boy Sandy.
And our boy Sandy, everyone's boy. We love Sandy. I think one of my favorite tweets about Sandy was from Jared Carrabas, suggesting that basically, you know, I mean, Sandy, this is the guy who's going to win basically every MVP in the AL and NL Cy Young Awards. I mean, the guy was just that good. He's going to win everything. They're going to hand over all the accolades.
Well, yeah, now that Kershaw's hurt, he can definitely pull ahead in that Cy Young in the NL.
I think so.
I can't wait to see how this all kind of pans out. It's all happening at the exact Ortiz. I mean, though it's a crime that he's retiring, A, and B, it's a crime that he's retiring during this time of his career and with this season. But it is good. It's, you know, I'm sure it's way better to go out on top than to fade. But I feel like it's just the absolute right year for it, with not only who is on the team starting every day, but where those guys are. You know, Betts and Bogarts and Bradley, though they may not all be here throughout their entire career, the fact that they aren't where they were, you know, that Bradley and Bogarts, I mean, to think about where Bradley was last year, I was kind of feeling ashamed that I even thought of buying a Jackie Bradley Jr. shirt, and was kind of saying at some point last year, man, there are so many people who bought his shirt because he was so good in spring training, and it just seemed like he was going to be this amazing player, and he just really had a pretty crappy year last year, truth be told. I mean, he went down at least once to the minors, mm-hmm. and just really, I mean, he was lighting it on fire, and I know spring training is spring training, but it just seemed like he seemed like Mookie Betts, like, he was going to be Mookie, like he was going to be the guy, like this all-star franchise player. And then he just kind of tanked. And to think now that Poppy's last season is kind of ushering in and happening at the same time that these guys are being actual strong players and not just flash in the pans, I think is a great time for that to happen for the team in general.
Everything has coalesced perfectly. And one of my favorite things about this offense is not David Ortiz in particular, but it's David Ortiz related. And it's how Ortiz views the youth of this team. The amount of respect he has for a Betts or for a Bogarts, how he acknowledges their tireless commitment to the game, to getting to the park early, to doing the work that they need to. I mean, he's more or less tapped Betts and Bogarts as kind of a leadership core when he's gone. Now, I will still contend that when he does leave, it's Dustin Pedroia's team, I think,
right,
from a leadership vantage point. But I think he's absolutely right. And we only get so many years of Xander. You know, he's progressed. You know, he's been with the team longer as far as service time. So you have to consider that. And, you know, is this a guy you can make a play at down the road, buying out arbitration years, free agency years, whatever, when you know that his agent is he who shall not be named? Got Boris, I got to think that's one of the most endorsing or most ringing endorsements of any players when David Ortiz says, you know what, you have this leadership quality. And it's just demonstrated on the field all the time. And the kid, they're all told, I think they're pretty humble kids. You know, and they've gelled well together. And I don't want to leave Jackie Bradley Jr. out of the conversation either. I think he is one of the most humble players in all of baseball. He's just out there doing exceptionally well, but also learning from the game and learning from others and relying on his teammates. It's just been a joy to watch. And of course, we're talking about the offense, and that really hasn't all told outside of June, which was, of course, a very dismal month for the team. The offense has been rather spectacular. And I mean, when you're looking over the course of the entire season, they still very much are.
When you talk about that, about the connection that they all have and the level of humility that they have, it kind of makes you think about the guys who are kind of going to be potentially left out in that conversation. And, I'm very interested, regardless of, you know, it's far ahead, and I definitely am invested in this season, but I'm curious to see where this team goes next year. And especially when you're talking about some of those prospects, and I mean, how much longer, even though he still is at Double A, Moncada, or is he at Triple A now?
He just had his promotion recently to Double A.
Okay. Even though he hasn't been at Triple A yet, like, I can't imagine him not being up next year. Maybe not right at the beginning of the year, but I don't know. I'm already starting to kind of put those pieces of, okay, who takes over at DH? Is that definitely Hanley? Is Hanley even still here? And, you know, how everybody kind of slides into place. And it's going to be interesting over these next couple of years to see what Dombrowski does and how this team looks, who we hold on to, how much we continue to kind of decimate the minor leagues to get major league talent. And I don't know, I'm interested to see how this all kind of works out with our wealth of minor league players and how much we use that to our advantage and how many Rizzos we get rid of.
On the spectrum of one end being prospect hoarder and the other end being a free dealer, I gravitate more toward the prospect order. You get attached to these kids and you see the potential. You hear the comparisons being drawn. You get excited about that. I certainly have my list of untouchables. And at one time I thought it was Anderson Espinosa, but I guess not. And I'm not, I'm not upset about that. Pomeranz had a rough night, but let's be honest. The 4 and 5 slots for the Red Sox rotation were absolute garbage. I mean, you weren't getting anything. I mean, you were lucky if you were getting a roll of the dice. I mean, it was a complete gamble. So you've got that, but you've got these freakish talents like Moncada or a Benintendi, who are doing exceptionally well. And I'm not going to even speculate on Moncada and how he develops. I mean, could he see some time next year? Sure, I don't see why not. I think the bigger question revolves around his fielding. No question, the guy can mash. And again, he hasn't. He's just made the most difficult leap in minor league progression, going from A to double A. And he seems to be handling that just fine, as does Andrew Benintendi. How do they handle AAA if and when that transition takes place? Not only that, but the defense. I mean, Dustin Pedroia looks pretty locked in at second base right now. I don't think Moncada is going to be throwing him. So that brings up the dialogue regarding, maybe Moncada slides over to third, which I think makes sense. But I know that Dombrowski, his mindset is that we need to have him immersed at one position at this, at a professional level for some time before we start dabbling. But I saw a tweet today General Manager Mike Hazen suggested that he may be seeing some time not only at third base but in left field. So I don't know what to make of that. But anytime I see left field, I just cringe, because that's just become a black hole. I mean, ever since Hanley was there, I love seeing Brock Holt in the field. I really think his value lies in that super utility role when he can spell pretty much anyone that isn't towing the rubber or behind home plate. He's just that incredible and valuable. I mean, he is truly a Swiss Army knife out there on the baseball diamond. But there are some certain needs that the Red Sox have to address there. I don't wonder if we see Benintendi this year yet. I mean, Dombrowski's been kind of quiet about it, but I know his defense is major league ready or close to it, and he's been hitting well. I'm just kind of curious to see how this all plays out. I mean, we've still got the rest of July and all of August. Does he get that cup of coffee in September? I don't know what happens with all the injuries. It doesn't sound like Chris Young is coming back anytime soon. So just a lot of unanswered questions, which of course is frustrating to fans. But again, as I alluded to earlier, Dombrowski has not failed to, at the very least, go out and address specific needs. So there's speculation that he might not even be done acquiring someone else. I would love to see another bullpen arm, especially with our beloved Koji going to the disabled list.
Yeah, geez.
Thank goodness that Ziegler was brought on.
God, yeah. Can you imagine if he wasn't?
Oh, talk about a prescient move on behalf of Dombrowski. I mean, that was like eerie foretelling right there. But it's worked out. I mean, the bullpen still is. Still has some chinks in its armor. Yeah, it would be nice to see another bullpen arm. I know they've toyed with some shuffling with their AAA options, and they just haven't panned out very well. I think of Pat Light getting lit up.
Oh man.
Was that was that the Angels game? Yeah.
That was the Angels, and I was at a barbecue with probably like half of my Angel fans' friends with it on. Like it was at one of my friends' houses. We were in his backyard, and he has two big screen TVs in his backyard by his pool. It was on two other screens inside his house. It was the worst.
Did you just want to bury yourself?
Yeah, I wanted to leave the house, basically.
Was that 21-2, I think, was the final score?
Yeah. Oh, it was so bad. And even the problem is he has, not the problem is, but to add on to it, he has three boys, two of which who are old enough to basically razz you with some understanding of the game, who are huge Angels fans and play baseball at a little league level. So I'm getting it from adults and kids during that entire travesty of a game. That was, God, that was one of the worst barbecues I've ever been at because of that.
That's cruel and unusual.
It was.
I was in my living room folding laundry, having a beer, and my wife looks at me and she's like, there's really no reason for you to stop now, is there? I'm like, nope. No, there's not. So you take your lumps. And that was awfully vicious, but you know, they took the series there.
Yeah, somehow took the series.
Then a series victory against Texas, a series victory against the Rays, a series victory against the Yankees, and now a series.
A sweep. Only two games, but
right,
a sweep.
But we can include, I know it's the home and away series that MLB likes to do nowadays, but you know, that was a 1-1 split out in San Francisco, so that's three. So I lumped those together, and you got another series victory there.
Yeah,
and they've been playing some good ball. You know, I tweeted out this morning. You know, the Red Sox have won 13 of their last 20 games, not including tonight's game, and that's you know, no team in the American League had more wins in that span.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's some good to be had there.
Yeah, and they're going to be coming in here into Anaheim completely different than the two had met in Fenway. Basically, Anaheim was, and I called it from the get-go before that game. I basically said, I think that was the time that we were kind of acting as the slump buster for a couple of teams or a couple of players that were just doing horrible, and they were having just destruction games against us at that time. And the Angels were on a horrible slide. And yes, we won the series, but the Angels have turned it around kind of since then. They, I think, outside of tonight, the last I saw, they were up 4-0. If they did hold on tonight, they have now won six in a row. So it is a little over, it's about a week and a half until the Red Sox come into town for a four-game stint with the potential of both teams being very hot at the time. And I'm watching tickets every single day on StubHub and Vivid Seats, who are neither of them are sponsors, but you're both welcome to sponsor my show for Poppy's last game at the Big A, which is a Sunday day game on July 31st, which will bring me full circle. My history with the Red Sox, way back when we were kids. My brother, who is a year and a half older than I, who couldn't care less about baseball now, we were big baseball card collectors, and his favorite player for, I really couldn't even tell you, and he probably couldn't even tell you what reason, was Yaz. And he had every single one of Yaz's cards when we were kids, from his rookie season on, which is a lot. And my guy was Nolan Ryan. He was like always my ultimate favorite player.
Love him.
But so we somehow every night for the 3-game series at Anaheim during Yaz's final season, we ended up getting tickets to every night for field level. But every game we went down to the dugout, got there during batting practice, sat and waited for Yaz to come out, and he never came out. One of the games, I think it was the second game, we went with our dad and we waited outside the stadium where the buses come out, and we followed the Red Sox bus to their hotel. And this is the only time I've ever done this. And we got out and ran into the lobby, and we had, like, my brother had his Yaz cards and I don't even remember what I had. I had something with me. And waiting for the players to come out into the lobby. And there were only a couple other people that did it, I think. And we never saw Yaz, but I got Jim Rice's autograph. I got all of these guys' autographs that I loved. And we never saw Yaz. It was like he took another car or a different bus or a different entrance to the hotel. We did not see him, and we stayed there for quite a while. So the last game that he was there, we were down there again during batting practice, and my brother and I were standing right at the right spot of the dugout where some players were coming out and signing stuff, not a lot. And it was the Angels were doing their BP, and it just kind of seemed like it was kind of towards the end. It was dwindling down, and my brother gave up and went over to the Angels dugout, like all the way around home plate, and some guys were coming out and he was trying to get their autographs, and Yaz came out of the dugout and I was still right there, and I'm like yelling across the field trying to get my brother's attention, who obviously can't hear me across all of that. And Yaz signed like 5 autographs, and the very last one he signed was mine. I had my glove with me to catch foul balls. I had nothing. I didn't have my brother's baseball cards. He didn't make it over in time. I had to borrow some other kid's Sharpie, and he signed my glove and went back down into the dugout. And that was the last we saw of him. And so I told my brother, I said, I'm going to do that for Poppy. Like, Poppy is my Yaz.
What a great story for you with the, you know, Yastrzemski and then now Ortiz. I mean, you're covering some serious ground in the history of the organization.
In Southern California.
Right. All in Southern California.
I don't remember when the Dodgers moved out here, but basically to go back to what we had kind of touched on before, that was my dad's team that he loved when they were in Brooklyn, basically. And he was fortunate enough that they ended up, he wasn't from Brooklyn or anything like that, but they ended up moving out here. And so it was kind of an easy maneuver for him to have his faraway team now right in his backyard, which was good for him. And we went to a bunch of Dodgers games, and then I basically wanted to root against him, and so I became an Astros fan, and Nolan Ryan was already an Astro at that point, so it was like meant to be. And yeah, so do you get guff from all of your local Twins fans when you're in your Red Sox regalia?
In my regalia? Typically not. I mean, you get some salty people. You know, I think the most common response is, hey, at least it's not the Yankees, which, you know, hey,
which is worldwide,
which is that's legit. I, you know, let the hate flow. I want to feel that hate from you, because I share it. But, nah, it's, it's not too bad. And I've been to a handful of Red Sox games at Target Field, and they're a good friendly bunch there. And not to say that there aren't any passionate fans out there, but when I run into passionate fans, typically they're you know, like a Red Sox fan, or there's some really passionate Cubs fans around here. Mm-hmm. Has that Midwest appeal, if you will.
Right.
So, and I mean, and I'm not judging anyone for being a casual fan, but I can't help myself. I am 100% all in Red Sox, and it's just, I don't know what it's like to be a casual fan. I don't understand how you can be a casual fan. I can't live that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way because I used to be, there was a time when I used to be really, really into basketball, and then I kind of went away for a while, and I think I kind of replaced it with hockey, and I was a huge hockey fan for a really long time, and then I kind of went back to basketball because I was a Celtics fan, and once they got Paul Pierce, that interested me a lot more in the team, and so I kind of rode that for a while, and once Pierce and KG went away, I just kind of lost interest really and haven't really gone back to it. And I like you said, I can't be casual. Like I either have to be all in and want to like wake up and see what the team did and whether it's roster moves or whatever, or I can't really care that much to just, oh, how are they doing? They've won this week. Oh, that's great. You know, I can't do that. It's just not in me really with sports.
Yeah. I think it comes down to DNA, you know, how we're wired. You know, if I miss a game, if for some reason I cannot watch a game, I'm disappointed. It probably brings a certain amount of elation to my wife, but it stinks for me. And my kids know what it means to me, and I'm trying to share that with them. I'm trying to share a passion with them. You know, like I say, it's something I've started on my own. It's nothing that I acquired from my dad. I mean, I don't fault him for that. I mean, you know, my dad grew up on a dairy farm. I mean, when my dad was driving a tractor probably at age 9, you know, and he was milking cows, and I mean, he didn't have time for any of that, at all. And so it was just a little bit different. So like, you know, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, you know, when grandpa took the whole family to old Metropolitan Stadium, I mean, that was monumental. That was a big deal there. And, you know, and hey, too, it's great. You got to catch a future Hall of Famer by the name of, Harmon Killebrew. So you can't be too mad about that.
Yeah, seriously.
So that was certainly a nice memory for him. But, you know, I always give him a hard time. I said, I know, Dad, that, you know, you had your obligations to Grandpa and to the farm. But, what a time to grow up in. You know, my dad was born in 53. I mean, you know, start following baseball in the early 60s. Oh, that was a beautiful decade for baseball. I just ooh and awe over it. And I'm like, oh, here I am. I grew up in, you know, I said, what I remember, the steroid era, that became popular. I was a big card collector, and I have actually gotten back into it. And that's how I followed baseball for a long time, was through the cards. You know, you memorize faces and names, and you look at the stats on the back, and there was just something nostalgic about it. And
I always loved baseball cards, and I know they aren't really worth what they used to be or anything close to it now, but it will always have kind of that special meaning and remembrance to me for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was my favorite memory of childhood. I didn't have a lot of friends as a kid. As I mentioned in the previous podcast, when I moved, it was one of those communities that you really needed to start at the ground level, you know, trying to make your way in at the third grade, as it was for me, was challenging. So I spent a lot of time at home by myself. and baseball cards really got me through a lot of tough times. And I remember riding my bike and all the way to the other end of town so I could go to the baseball card shop and spend my entire allowance every week. Never failed.
Yes. Ugh, I remember that too. That's so funny.
All my money. Lots of miles traveled on that bike. But, you know, that's where I wanted to put my money. Lots of good memories. I love looking through. I haven't bought any cards in a while. I really need to do that. It's a much more expensive hobby now.
Yes. And it's so different. I mean, when I was a kid, there was basically Topps and Donruss. And that was really kind of it. There was maybe one other, but I remember basically keeping those. Oh, maybe Fleer. And, you know, since then, like my true series of cards, like a full run of them from, I think I maybe started in 88 or 89, starting to collect again hardcore. And, you know, then it was like Upper Deck was the card to have, and Topps was just kind of, Topps is Topps, and Upper Deck has really nice cards and the pictures are great and it's got a different surface type and it looks really nice. It was like the HD of cards, basically.
They were a game changer.
Oh, totally.
And those were like $1 a pack, which made you gasp for air. Mm-hmm. I was paying 35 cents for a pack of Topps or a pack of Donruss. Like, now you're asking me triple?
Yeah. Well, I think we've thoroughly covered the Boston Red Sox and our wife-threatening passion for them. So, again, thank you very much for spending so much time, especially since you are 2 hours ahead of me, and I just looked at the clock and kind of cringed on your behalf.
Oh, it's 1:53. It's fine.
So, thank you very much, though. I'm glad that this all ended up working out and that we were able to make this happen remotely. You're my first remote guest, and I'm excited to be able to spend some more time talking to people that I can't actually sit down with. I can't thank you enough. And if you guys want to follow Austin on Twitter and see more of this in print and his hilarity and our shared struggle as Red Sox fans on many nights, he is at Ike, which is EICH underscore AJ on Twitter. And he is a very good follow, not only for his love for the Red Sox, but his love for his 3 daughters and his family life, as well as being a Packers fan, which we did not touch on at all, which doesn't mean that I have no respect for the Packers. I do. I just figured it would probably end up this way, and it stuck with baseball and the Red Sox more so.
No offense taken.
Again, even off Mike, thanks again for doing this. Sorry it ended up going this incredibly long, but...
No, that's fine. I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, likewise. All right, well, get some good sleep, and I'll see you on Twitter tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right, later, Austin.
Yeah, bye, Tim.
All right, and that concludes the episode with Austin and myself for our little fork in the road discussion on sports and whatnot. So I hope you all enjoyed that. Again, you can find Austin at Twitter at Ike, E-I-C-H underscore A-J. You can find Daddy Unscripted on Twitter as Daddy Unscripted. You can also find us on Facebook. And please make sure that you find us on iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher Radio, whatever you may use to listen to the podcast. You can also listen to it straight from our website, which is daddyunscripted.com. But if you do find us on any of those other formats, I'd love to hear your reviews. And you can leave a note for me at daddyunscripted@gmail.com, which will also help you say a little something more personal if there's something you want to say about the podcast or directions you'd like to see us take, guests you'd like us to potentially have on, whether that's you or your husband or somebody you know. We'd love to get that information from you as to guests we should be looking for that have really interesting stories to add to the podcast in general. So daddyunscripted@gmail.com. Thanks again for all your support and all of the feedback that you have given me. It really means the world to me for all of you to take the time to even just give a 5-star review. That's something a little extra that you're doing, so I do appreciate it. And I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope you enjoy the next one that you listen to.